Chapter 9. The Dragon.
So, you and Thorin. Keely winked at her as they made their way up the western slope of the Lonely Mountain. Pella blushed. I don't know what you're talking about, she said primly. Shouldn't you be keeping an eye out for secret doors? I am, Keely protested, making a show of knocking against an outcropping of stone. No doors here. But we've waited long enough to question you, so answer us now or when we meet back up with the company. There's nothing to answer, she said. He's made me no offers or promises. He better not have, said Feely. Not without going through me. King or no, that would be a scandal. Keely snickered. Even more scandalous than him barricading himself in your bedroom. I thought Feely and Dory were going to break the door down. I would have, Feely grumbled, if you'd not been sleeping. Sleeping? Keely howled. Oh, Feely, did you believe that? I was sleeping, Bella said, blushing to the tips of her ears. Really? Keely snorted. The entire time. We're not children, Belle. You can tell us the truth. I was, she repeated, face growing even redder. We only talked for a bit when I woke up. Aha! Keely nodded, satisfied. So you did talk. What did he say to you? Keely demanded. Did he talk of courtship? No, nothing like that, she said. As a matter of fact, he told me he could make me no promises until he had reclaimed the mountain. I knew it! Keely yelled, loud enough that the crows and the rocks around them turned to glare. Pay up, Feely! Feely scowled. I will do no such thing. He has given her nothing yet. Anyway, last I checked, she wanted no suitors. Shall I warn him off, Belle? Ah, she said, looking up at the sky. It's possible I may have been a bit hasty when I spoke before. Perhaps we ought to, let events play out. What? Really? Keely frowned. No, you said you didn't want any suitors. Is it just because it's Thorin? Because king or not, he can't force you. No, it's not like that, Bella said, raising her hands in protest. I'm not going to explain it to you, Keely. I don't think anyone's forcing her, Feely said, knowingly. I don't like it, Keely complained, kicking at a pebble. She was hardly ours for any time at all, and now she'll go and be someone else's. I'll still be your sister, she protested. Won't I? And anyway, I won't belong to anyone. Of course, Feely soothed. Don't mind Keely, he's only jealous. You know how dwarves are with their treasures. He turned to his brother. This is a good thing. Better our uncle win her than some dwarf from the Iron Hills. Keely brightened. That's true. We'll still see her all the time this way. And he hasn't offered her anything yet, Feely went on. These things take months, even after that. You're right, Keely said, happy again. So we've still got ages. What do you think he'll give? Something horrible, no doubt. I suppose it's too much to help you let me decline it, Feely asked, resigned. Bella shook her head, and he sighed. Fine, but think about it, at least. Yes, make him work for it, Keely agreed with a smirk. Our grandfather had his gifts rejected 21 times before one was accepted. What was it, Feely? A set of hair beads, made from solid rubies, Feely said. That would be very appropriate. Just remember, he went on hastily, only I can refuse unless you change your mind about this whole courting business. I will not. Bella rolled her eyes. Then you have to accept it if I pass it along, whatever it is, Feely said. And I warn you, Thorin picks terrible gifts. Keely made a face. The worst. Sweets you hate, shirts that itch, dusty old books of history that are no use to anyone. I wouldn't mind a book, Bella said. Now that I would send back, Feely said. Well, I'll be rich as kings by then. He can do a bit better. And you'll be a rather important hobbit, so it better be impressive, whatever it is. What should I expect? She asked. That is, if you really think he'll offer anything. He had better, Keely scowled. After what happened in Lake Town. It'll probably be something extravagant, in honor of your status, Feely said. A necklace as thick as your arm, or some such.
That sounds very impractical. What I have to wear it?
Bella frowned.
Once I fall over?
Probably at least once, Feely admitted. And you must praise it, or I'll have to try again, and it'll get even worse.
Oh, what about a solid gold oliphant?
Keely suggested, eyes shining.
Life-sized!
That did not deserve a response.
Can't we just do things the Hobbit way?
She asked, dropping her face into her hands.
What would that entail? Feely said. No metal, no gems.
Flowers, she said. He would send flowers, or bring them in person, if he were bold.
That's it? Keely asked, eyes wide. That's all. Any weed off the roadside. Feely could never allow such a thing. You'd be a laughingstock.
It's a little more complicated than that, Bella said. You can't just give any flowers. Nothing wilting, obviously. And of course the type is important. You wouldn't want to upset your intended before courting even begins.
The wrong type of flowers would anger you.
Feely asked, as Keely's eyes scanned the area for what Bella could only assume were offensive blossoms.
Not all on their own, she said. Don't dwarves know the language of flowers?
No, stop, I can see from your faces that you don't. She tried to think of a way to explain.
Every flower is a message, she began.
Is there some kind of code? Keely interrupted. Does it have to do with the number of leaves?
No, no. What I mean is, well, it's hard to describe. For example, if I were to send you flowers, Keely, I might choose daisies, to wish you good cheer, or a spring of fennel and white heather, for strength and protection before a battle.
What flowers are for courting? Feely asked. Your intended, back in the Shire, what did he give you?
Daffodils, Bella said, which mean unrequited love, generally a plea for returned affection. She smiled. Not a prediction of things to come.
It's all too complicated. Keely shook his head. I can pick out a daffodil to save our lives, and those meanings sound tricky. Better to let Thorn give you whatever it is, and pretend to like it. It doesn't have to be a great compliment. Just say it's shiny, or nice.
I'm sure I'll manage. Bella rolled her eyes. Say, is this the start of a path?
Finding the door was the easy part, compared to the tedious waiting that came afterwards. But soon enough the setting sun on Durin's Day revealed the keyhole, and the way into the mountain lay before them. The dwarves looked at each other, discomfort obvious on their features, even in the fading light.
Well, said Glowin, here we are then.
Indeed,
nodded Bomber.
Indeed.
Dwellin crossed his arms over his chest and leaned back against the mountainside.
So, who's going in first?
Me, I presume. Bella said, pulling at her cuffs. I'm ready. Feely looked appalled.
What?
To go and look around, she continued, puzzled. Aren't I the burglar?
Oh, no, not this again, said Keely, turning a beseeching look towards Thorin.
She frowned.
Now don't start. This is why you brought me. I signed a contract.
Balin nodded.
You did,
he said, pulling the folded paper from an inside pocket of his cloak.
I have it here, if you'd like to take a look at it.
Bella gaped. Have you held on to that all this time? All this way?
Of course.
Balin frowned, as Feely snatched the contract out of his hand.
Thorn wouldn't have trusted me with something so important otherwise.
Bella, you signed this? Feely gasped, flicking through the pages. Did you even read it?
I think we're a bit beyond that now, Feely, she said, with a wave of her hand.
Either way, he said firmly, handing the contract back to Balin, I see nothing that obligates you to go first into that tunnel.
It's only sensible, she protested. I'm quieter than you dwarves, and smaller. And then there's this, she said, pulling the ring out of her pocket.
Look.
she slipped it on her finger, causing an absolute uproar among the dwarves.
"Calm down,"
Thorn shouted over the commotion.
"Everyone be still a minute. Bella, take off the ring, if you would."
She reappeared, grinning, and Keely grabbed her hand, holding her in place. "Sorry," she said. "I should have explained first."
"How did you do that?"
asked Nori and Dwalin together, shooting each other distrustful glares.
"It's the ring,"
she said, holding it up. "I found it when I was lost beneath the mountains."
"That's how you got past the Elf King's guards,"
Nori exclaimed. She nodded. "Yes, I couldn't have broken you out without it, or found my way back through the goblins."
"I think we'd better have the whole story," said Thorin, "and get to the bottom of this once and for all."
If Bella had been worried the dwarves would think less of her after she revealed the ring's secret, those fears were quickly put to rest. Most seemed impressed by her outwitting the creature beneath the Misty Mountains, and everyone agreed that having a magic ring would be a help to them on their quest. Only Feely and Keely looked unhappy when she finished her story.
"I can't believe Thorin knew before we did,"
Keely complained.
"You could have told us, Bell,"
Feely said, frowning.
"Did you think we'd try to take it?"
Her mouth fell open.
"No, never,"
she protested. "Honestly, I hadn't given it much thought before we were caught in the dungeons. There were too many other things on my mind. And then afterwards, in Lake Town, I forgot it again." She narrowed her eyes, puzzled. "Isn't that funny, that it should slip my mind so often?"
"It is strange,"
Keely agreed, somewhat mollified.
"If I had a magic ring, I think I would tell everyone."
"Pray that never happens." Feely rolled his eyes skyward. "I should never feel safe again, anywhere in the world." "In any case," she said, putting her worries over the ring out of her mind, "I should go into the tunnel and see what's what. Smeg may not even be in there."
"He is," said Owen. "Dragon smoke pours from the base of the mountain, near the river. Can't you see it?"
"That is not proof," argued Balin. "He may have left long ago, or he may sleep."
"There's only one way to know for certain," Bella said firmly, "and it isn't to sit out here and hope he comes calling."
Feely and Keely protested, but most of the others saw the sense in her plan, and in the end they looked to Thorin for his decision.
"You will come back,"
he ordered, staring at Bella until she felt uncomfortable.
"If you see the dragon, you will turn around immediately."
"Yes, yes, whatever you say," she said.
"I don't actually want to be incinerated, you know."
No one could argue with that, and so Bella was permitted to enter the tunnel. Her steps slowed as she neared the end, because she could make out a light in the distance, and there was only one explanation for that. "I ought to go back," she thought. "I did promise, and they'll be very angry with me if I don't. But," she argued with herself, moving a few steps closer, "someone must look. I'm quieter than any of the others, and I have the ring." Still, it took all her resolve to take the last step out of the tunnel, into the rim and beyond. The treasure hall glowed with a red light that faded to flickering against the stone walls, which were lined with weapons of all types, shields of every shape and design, bright spears tipped with gold and set with glimmering gems, and swords and knives beyond counting. But that was nothing, nothing at all compared to the endless sea of golden jewels that covered every inch of the floor and settled in drifts that rose higher than the ceiling of her hobbit hole. She edged her way into the room, stepping as lightly as she could over the coins, not wanting to make a single sound. As she rounded one of the treasure piles, she saw him. Smaug slept, stretched indolently across the largest mound of treasure, his bat-like wings curled over his back. Steam billowed from his nostrils, but other than that, there was no hint of life in him. Bella had seen enough. She took a step backwards, then another, her eyes locked on the dragon for any sign at all that he was aware of her intrusion. He did not stir, and finally she turned away, heading for the tunnel as quickly as she could. Just outside the tunnel's entrance, something caught her eye, sparkling from amid a pile of gold coins. She brushed them aside carefully, and gasped when she saw what she'd uncovered. A stunning white gem,
bigger than her fist, and carved with so many facets it was almost smooth to the touch. In a room full to the brim with treasure, it stood out like a lily in a field of daisies. "I bet I know what you are," Bella breathed, reverent. She cast a furtive look round, eyeing the dragon for any movement. Then, when she was satisfied, she slipped the stone into her pocket. "Well, he's in there all right," was the first thing she said, after clearing the door out of the mounts and taking a great gulp of fresh air.
"Did you see him?"
Thorne said, grabbing her by the shoulders.
"Did he see you?"
She shook her head. "No, no, he was asleep, as far as I could tell, curled up in a pile of treasure." She narrowed her eyes. "Which, by the way, it would take 100 burglars 100 years to smuggle out of the mountain. He ought to have engaged a blasted dragon slayer." Thorne scowled, and Balin laid a comforting hand on his arm.
"It's not so bad as all that," he said. "We have the prophecy on our side, after all, and we've come this far."
Thorne straightened.
"Yes, you're right. Let me think on it."
He turned to the others.
"Get some sleep, all of you. We will have much to discuss come morning."
They woke Bella before sunrise and questioned her for several hours about precisely what she had seen inside the mountain. There wasn't much to tell. She described the layout of the room as best she could, and the position of the dragon within it, but she had not stayed long enough to notice anything really useful. She didn't mention the white stone, which sat heavily in her pocket.
"We have the element of surprise,"
Dwalin suggested, as Thorne sketched the outline of the room in the dust on the ground.
"But our weapons are useless against the creature's blasted scales."
"Every worm has his weak spot," Bella murmured, though she could not recall any on Smaug.
"What's that?"
asked Thorin, looking up from his plans. "Oh, just something my father used to say," she answered, fiddling with her cloak. "Could it be true?" The dwarves looked at each other.
"It is possible,"
Balin said, grudgingly.
"I've heard such things before."
"The dragon has long rested comfortably under the mountain," speculated Nori. "Untested, who's to say he's been maintaining his armor?" "He took no notice of me last night," Bella offered. "I can go in again, now that I know what to look for. I think I could get a bit closer."
"That's a fine idea,"
Glowin beamed at her, just as Dori said,
"I don't care for that idea at all."
They glared at each other, and soon enough the entire camp had broken into an argument. Only Bella sat silent, looking troubled. "Keely," she said, pulling her brother away from a fight with Nori, "can I ask you something?" "Of course," he said, dropping to the ground beside her. "But wouldn't you rather ask Feely?" She shook her head. "No, he's busy," she said, gesturing to where Feely and Thorin were having an animated discussion with Dwalin and Owen. "And I think this is more your type of problem, anyway." He raised a brow at her, and she blushed. "Have you ever," she began, "have you ever thought about doing something that you knew was foolish, but you wanted to do it anyway?" He snorted. "You just described my life, Belle," he said, throwing an arm around her shoulders. "Now, what's this all about?" "I'm thinking of taking something," she whispered, glancing around to make sure no one was paying attention. "Something I shouldn't." "Really?" he asked, delighted. "What?" "You'd never believe me," she sighed. He smirked. "Well, that doesn't make me less curious. But whatever it is, you are a burglar, as you're so fond of saying. Isn't it your job to take things?" She brightened. "That's true. You're absolutely right." His smirk bloomed into a wide grin. "Well, there you are. I helped. And anyway, if you get into trouble, Feely will get you out again. He lives for that. It would be inconsiderate to deprive him of the chance."
"That's also true," she laughed.
She gestured toward the others. "Do you think they're getting anywhere?" "Nah," he shrugged. "They'll be at it for hours. So if you're going to try something, now's the time." "Thank you, Keely," she said, getting to her feet. She took a deep breath, then another, willing her heart to stop beating so frantically against her chest. Excuse me, Feely,
she called, voice light, but hands nearly shaking with nerves. I've got a present for your uncle. Pass it along for me. And then she tossed the Arkenstone, casual as you please, into her brother's outstretched hand. Oh, Belle, Keely breathed, loud in the sudden silence. You're more cunning than we ever suspected. The company stared, motionless, at the jewel, but Feely's eyes were locked on Bella's. She met his gaze for a long moment, then nodded ever so slightly, and he sighed as if he had come to a hard decision. Uncle, he called, without turning away from her, Bella Baggins offers you a gift. Will you accept it? Without a word, Thorne snatched the gem from Feely's grasp. He turned it this way and that in his hands, running his fingers over its facets and letting the light shimmer and reflect into a thousand points on the ground. Is that... Ori whispered, covering his mouth with his hand. The Arkenstone, Balin said wondrously. It's a sign. It must be. At last, Thorne looked up. Beautiful, he said. But I've seen lovelier. The others gasped, then went so silent the slight breeze over the rock face echoed like a hurricane. What? Feely growled, taking a step back. Do you accept with disfavor? Do you decline? Thorne held up a hand. Peace, Feely. The gem is without flaw. But even so, I find I prefer the sight of she who gave it. Keely, Bella whispered nervously. Does that qualify as praise? I'm counting it, Feely said lovely. Thank you, Thorne said, his eyes locked on Bella. Now, as I have accepted, I believe we're entitled to a moment alone. Feely scowled. A moment only, he warned, stepping out from between them. Thorne motioned Bella forward, and she followed him down the path a little ways, until they were out of sight of the others. She looked up at him, more anxious than ever. He'd accepted the gift, yes, but he could hardly have done otherwise, and she couldn't say that he looked pleased.
Do you know what you've done?
He said, the corners of his mouth lifting in amusement. Have I shown you insufficient honor? She asked, dryly, swallowing her nerves. There are plenty of bits and bobs in there. I could try again.
When you said you had a gift for me,
he said, smile widening,
I was prepared to accept whatever pretty bauble you pilfered from the dragon's hoard, and heap praise upon it. But the Arkenstone!
He laughed, delighted.
Keely is right. You are cunning. Even had I wished it, you chose the only item in the mountain I could not refuse.
So you do not object? She sighed, relaxing.
Well, my position is awkward,
he said, and Bella would have sworn he looked cheerful.
It is expected that I will return the gesture with a gift of equal significance. You have set me a mighty quest.
Oh, she colored. I did not know.
I would not change it,
he said. Holding the gem up to the level of her face, he gazed back and forth between them. After a moment, he lowered his hand.
It is a stone,
he said, his voice warm and thick with awe.
After all these years of worry, only a stone. I could leave it by the roadside without a thought, were it not a gift from you.
She ducked, blushing mightily. No sense getting too high-spirited, she reminded him. There's still the dragon. He actually laughed.
Good,
he said, tossing the jewel into the air and catching it in one hand.
I could slay him single-handed. Ask me,
he said, his grin settling into a soft look as he slipped the stone into his pocket.
Right now I feel I could do anything, if only you asked.
Feely will come to collect me soon, she said, unable to keep from smiling. So I'd rather we stay here a bit longer, if it's all the same to you.
That suits me perfectly,
he said, taking her hands.
Cunning indeed.
All talk of the dragon paused at this new development, and Bella walked back into the midst of the others to a chorus of whistles and applause.
"Well," Feely said, leaning against her shoulder, "if you are hoping to avoid receiving one of his terrible presents, I'm afraid you'll be disappointed."
"He told me," she smiled. "But it'll take him a while, at least, to top mine." Keely couldn't stop laughing.
"I don't think even Feely could get you out of this one, Belle," he choked out. "Oh, his face! I'll never get over it, never!"
"Feely's face or Thorin's?" Bella asked.
"Everyone's!" Feely snickered. "The dragon could have flown through the camp spitting treasure and no one would have taken any notice. Ma's going to chew gravel when she finds out."
Feely brushed a hand over her hair. "You're sure, Belle?" he asked, solemnly. She nodded. "Quite sure. It did not suit me, the waiting and speculating. This way it is on my terms, which is much more satisfactory." He grinned.
"As long as you're happy."
Keely poked him in the side.
"Yes, all right, Keely. His face was very amusing."
"Ow!" cried Bomber, pressing a hand to his head. Conversation stopped as everyone turned to look at him.
"Something hit on me. It felt like a rock."
"Look!" pointed Ori, when one pebble, then another, began to roll down the slope beside them. The ground began to tremble beneath their feet.
"No,"
Thorn whispered, staring into the sky. Dwalin grabbed for his axes.
"Dragon!"
he bellowed, shoving Ori behind him.
"Into the tunnel!"
Thorn ordered, grabbing Bella and Keely by their elbows and propelling them towards the entrance.
"Our bags!"
Feely shouted, turning toward the supplies. Dory snatched the back of his hood and yanked them back.
"No time!"
he shouted, moving through the doorway just as the dragon burst through the gates with a sickening crash.
"Is everyone in?"
Thorn asked as Feely passed him.
"Aye, close it!"
Dwalin said, peering out at the dragon, who was circling overhead.
"We'll be trapped!"
Glowen protested. Thorn shook his head.
"No help for it. If he..."
"He's spotted us!" Bofur shouted. "Shut the door, now!"
Working together, the dwarves slammed the heavy door shut with a solemn thud, and no sooner had the seam of the doorway disappeared into the rock than the mountain began to shake in earnest. The dwarves stumbled, and Bella fell to her knees as something slammed into the side of the mountain, just where the door had been. Feely pulled her to her feet, and she clung to him in the darkness as the dragon hit the mountain again, and then a third time. Finally, silence fell, with nothing but the ragged breathing of the dwarves to give away their positions in the darkness.
"Is everyone accounted for?"
Thorin asked. Each of the dwarves answered in turn.
"That is something, at any rate, though we must assume our ponies and supplies are lost." "Forget the ponies," growled Dwalin. "How do we open the door?"
They fumbled with it, running their fingers over the blank rock wall, looking for hidden catches, but it was too dark, and they found nothing.
"So, we're trapped," sighed Dory.
"There is one way out,"
suggested Feely, turning to the mouth of the tunnel, where they could make out an ominous red glow.
"You're not serious," said Bofur.
"He'll be expecting us now. He knows we're here." "What choice do we have?"
yelled Keely.
"We can't stay here forever."
"Let me do it," Bella said, trying to keep her voice steady. "I'll go and have a look around again, like we planned. I may see something we can use against him."
"There's nothing to be used against him," Feely protested. "Not when he knows we're here. You're not going back down there."
"I have to. I took the stone. I woke him. Me. I must put it right."
"We woke him,"
Thorin said.
"The dragon has ever been the flaw in our plans. Now there is only one route open to us. We cannot go back, so we must move forward."
"Into his lair?" Bella gasped. "No, you did not see him. He is huge, a monster. There must be some other way."
"We knew it would come to this," Balin said, gently. "At the end of the journey, there was always the dragon."
She had thought of it often enough, but at that moment it was treacherously clear that there were only 14 of them to do such an impossible thing. "There isn't any hope at all, is there?" she asked, then clapped a hand over her mouth, appalled at herself. But the others only laughed. "Not much," Glowin said. "There never was, but we are dwarves, and this is our home. Thorn is our king. We will not go down easily."
"I must face the dragon,"
Thorin said, his hand on the hilt of his sword.
"This has been my quest and my destiny since he drove us out of Erebor. Mine alone," he said,
looking from one of his companions to another.
"If any of you choose not to go on, speak now, and no blame upon you. It is more than even a king could ask."
There was a weighty silence as the dwarves looked at each other, then down the hall, where the treasure hall glowed red. Finally, Balin stepped forward.
"I swore I would follow you," he said,
standing tall, as if years had fallen off his shoulders.
"I'm not so faithless as to leave you now."
"Aye,"
nodded Dwalin, bumping against his brother.
"The sons of Fundin have your back."
"To the death, cousin!"
Glowin shouted, hefting his axe. Owen sighed, leaning against the stone wall.
"Yes, fine, to the death."
"Count me in,"
cried Ori, raising a fist.
"Let's give Smaug a taste of good dwarven iron."
"Me too," agreed Dori, putting his hands on his brother's shoulders. "We haven't come this far just to give up." Nori drew his daggers. "I suppose I'd rather die with the rest of you than starve in this filthy tunnel."
"We're with you,"
said Beaufort, with Bomburn Beaufort nodding alongside him.
"Till the end."
"Until the end," Feely repeated, and Keely bowed his head.
"So be it,"
Thorin said.
"I could find no finer companions if I scoured every corner of Middle-earth."
He turned to Bella.
"You have earned your place among us, several times over. You need do no more."
"What would you have me do?"
She glared at him.
"Wait here, while the rest of you go off and face the dragon."
He scowled, taking her by the arm and walking her a ways down the tunnel.
"Yes, I would have you stay here. Is that so surprising? Thinking of you in peril, I feel my will would falter."
"I will help you," she said firmly, "for I am also one of your company, and furthermore I swore I would."
"How?"
he asked, shaking her slightly.
"You are no warrior."
"I know that,"
she said, pulling free of his grip.
"Do you think I'm a fool? Of course I'm no warrior. I'm not even a proper burglar. But I've not come so far and gone through so much to be left on the doorstep."
He stared at her in that measuring way of his, and she pulled herself straight under his gaze, for once glaring right back.
"If we live,"
he said.
"If we both survive."
He choked and said no more. She sighed and reached up to brush the tips of her fingers along his cheek. "Is it so unlikely?" He looked down at her, his silence answer enough. "All right. Well, I suppose we must try for it anyway." She took a step back, but Thorin grabbed her roughly by the shoulders, pulling her against his chest.
"Mukhamahal bukhoz murukzu,"
he said, leaning down to kiss her forehead.
"Mahal's hammer shield you."
"That's very grand," she said, smiling a bit. "A hobbit would just say good luck, but I suppose hobbits do not often face dragons."
"Good luck,"
Thorin said, closing his eyes as he released her.
"Feely, Keely,"
he called.
"Escort your sister to the entryway. I must speak with Dwalin."
Feely and Keely sprinted to her side as she started down the tunnel. "Please don't, Belle," Feely said, when they reached the end. "Stay back here. If we should fail, you could sneak past him afterwards and escape through the front gates." "To nothing and no one," she said gently, shaking her head. "And anyway, I could not do it. If we fall,
it will be together. She reached over to take one of his hands, and Keeley took the other. Together, he echoed, and Feely nodded. Or not at all. She smiled. I know my preference, she said, kissing them each on the cheek. Before they could say anything more, she slipped on the ring and moved the rest of the way down the treasure hall. Just before she left the tunnel, she looked back. They were still there, side by side and looking in her direction, though they could not see her, their faces as inscrutable and immovable as stone. She stopped to take one more look, just in case it was her last. Regret rose in her throat like a bile, choking her. Had she ever told them what it had meant to be part of their family? Did they know how much she cared for them, that she would risk anything to help them survive? Would she ever see Keeley smile again, or hear Feely's warm laughter? If she were slain, would they remember her? Would they speak of her, or sing her lullaby? She blinked back tears, and swallowed as best she could. There was no use in such thoughts, she told herself, tearing her gaze away. All she could do for them now was go on, into the dragon's lair, and find something, anything, that might protect her brothers. She walked through the mouth of the tunnel, pushed on by a terrible, fierce love that burned in her chest, hotter than any dragon's fire, and left no room in her heart for fear. She stepped into the hall slowly, staying close to the edge of the room as she made her way towards the prone form of the dragon. Moving silently, she crept over a mound of gold, hoping a closer look would reveal some flaw in the beast's shining armor. "So, little thief," Smaug said, and Bella nearly fell over from the shock of it. "You've come back for more." His eyes flicked open, and for a moment she was certain he could see her, right through the magic of the ring. "I am no thief," she said, slipping between two piles of coins. Her voice shook, and she almost dropped to her knees, so fiercely was she shaking, but she made herself think of Feely and Keeley, waiting for her in the tunnel, and felt herself steady. "You took something of mine, a paltry enough thing, not even gold," the dragon mocked, flicking his wing. "But poor as it was, you stole it." "Something of yours?" she asked. "That can't be so. Did you mine it? Shape it? Buy it in the marketplace?"
"It was mine by right,"
Smaug growled, his tail lashing back and forth, sending coins spraying out behind him. "If there is a thief here," she continued, as if he had not spoken, "it is not me."
"Well, if you are not a thief, what are you?"
the dragon said, snaking his way between the treasure piles, nostrils widening as he tried to sniff her out. "No dwarf, I can smell that, and no man. Tell me now, and perhaps I will spare you. I might find some use for you as my servant."
"You are very wise, O Smaug the Terrible," Bella said, twisting her hands together to keep them from trembling. She had read enough to know that dragons did not keep servants, or at any rate, they did not keep them long. But they did love riddles, and she could use that to distract him, for a little while at least. "I'm no dwarf, nor man, nor elf, either." The dragon stilled.
"I will ask you once more," he breathed, and she knew she had caught his interest. "What are you?"
"I am something different, something in between," she said, taking a few steps closer, eyeing his rough scales for any weaknesses. "I am the rabbit that rides the bear. I walk beneath mountains and soar over the open land."
"Some beast, then?" Smaug asked, turning his head in her direction. "I would not think a creature would have any use for gems."
I take what I do not love, because I love one who may not take, she said, moving out of the path of his gaze. The dragon snorted, and Bella wondered if it were her imagination, or if the room felt a bit warmer. That is easier. So, whatever you are, you did not come alone. Piles of treasure broke and crashed like waves as he made for the tunnel. I will roast your companions, thief, and feast on their bones before I return for you. Will that loosen your tongue? Stop, she shouted, clawing her way up a mound of gold and ripping the ring from her finger. Do not touch them, you worm, you cowering lizard. Do not dare. I've befriended wizards. I've haunted the halls of kings. I have held fire in my hands and pulled those I love from the water. Do not dare defy me. I'm the beginning of your end. I am the bell that tolls your downfall. Bold words, roared Smaug, whipping back towards her, scattering gold in all directions. They have won you a prize. I will eat your heart before I start on your companions. Bella watched the dragon bear down on her, his great roar echoing in her ears, and his claws crashing against the metal covering the ground, and felt a distant serenity overtake her. She was seeing her death, she knew, and she had brought it down upon herself, but she could not regret her final moments, not if they brought her friends a little more time.
Hazard!
Someone yelled in the distance, and the room erupted as the dwarves poured through the tunnel, scattering across the room and surrounding the dragon like a plague of gnats. Smaug turned, bellowing his frustration as the dwarves took turns stabbing at his scales and ducking away before he could reach them with his sword-like teeth. That there were so few of them was an advantage, Bella realized, falling to her knees. It would have been impossible to smuggle an army into the treasure hall, and even if they had, Smaug could wipe out a garrison with a single flick of his tail. But 14! He could barely see them in the low light, and even when he did spy one, there was gold enough to hide behind, while the other dwarves provided distraction. In fact, it seemed the real danger wasn't even the dragon. It was the coins and gems flying through the air, stirred by his great wings and kicked up by his feet and tail. Something hit Bella in the shoulder, knocking her back, and she tried to block the onslaught by crawling behind a treasure pile. A shield landed next to her, thrown by Feely, who had picked up one of his own and was using it to defend his brother as he fired his arrows. He gestured at her sharply, and she fumbled for it, shoving her arm through the two big straps and bringing it up to cover her face. Better protected, she scanned the room and realized that all the dwarves who could spare a hand had picked up shields, covering themselves and their companions as they harried and charged the dragon. Smaug roared, turning suddenly and sending the dwarves scrambling. One didn't move fast enough, and the tip of Smaug's wing sent them flying, landing hard against a mound of gold. "Beaufort!" Bella screamed, running to his side as best she could through the flying debris. "Are you hurt?" His eyes were closed, and he did not answer. Terrified, she put her hands on his chest, but the slight rise and fall of his breath reassured her that he was not yet finished. Spurred by a new purpose, she stepped over him, putting herself between him and the dragon. Several heavy items slammed into her shield, and it was all she could do to keep them from knocking her in the head or falling on Beaufort. The dragon reared up, higher and higher, until his head nearly touched the glittering ceiling. His wings spread, spanning the cavern, and his chest, crusted with golden gems, sparkled in the light. He's almost beautiful, Bella thought to herself, the way storms are, if you watch them from a distance. Something caught her eye, a dull spot in Smaug's sparkling breastplate, just over his left breast. For Bella, whose sharp eye could find one crooked stitch in a wardrobe, it may as well have been a beacon. There! She screamed as she pointed, as loud as she could. Aim there! It did her no good. She couldn't even hear her own voice, not over the dragon's roaring and the ground-shifting crash of metal against stone. She looked around wildly, but the only dwarves she could see were Dwalin and Thorin, side by side, facing the dragons. She waved her arms, desperate to get their attention, and when that failed, she scooped up a handful of coins and flung it towards them as hard as she could. The coins landed at their feet, catching their notice, and they looked in Bella's direction at last. Her hands shaped gestures she was betting all their lives she remembered correctly. "Chest! Left! Open!" she signed, hoping she had done it right and been understood. Dwalin's eyes widened, axes falling to the ground, and without looking he reached behind him for the spear Thorin was already pressing into his hand. He looked up at the rearing dragon, taking his time to find the place Bell had shown them, and she saw him smile when he finally did. The spear flew, straight and terrible, and Bella didn't breathe until it pierced the dragon's heart. Smaug fell, hitting the treasure with a force that shook the mountain, sending the gold crusting in a last, great slide toward Bella and Beaufort. She tugged frantically at his arm, but he didn't move an inch, or stir, and she almost laughed, because had she really seen the dragon slain just to die under a pile of gold? There was nothing for it. She threw herself over Beaufort, covering his head with her arms, and closed her eyes tightly, bracing for the impact. It never came, and she looked up at coins and gems flying in all directions, over her head and in front of her face, but none were touching her, and she turned to find Feely and Keely beside her, shoulder to shoulder, kneeling behind shields braced between them and the breaking crest of metal. It must have hurt, Bella realized, because Keely tipped back and nearly lost his balance, but Feely grabbed him by the arm and held, until they were steady as stones in a river. It felt like they stayed that way for an age, but really it was only a few seconds until the last coin clinked to stillness, and the silence covered the cavernous hall so suddenly that it almost made her panic again. Something shifted beneath her, and she looked down into Beaufort's wide, startled eyes. They were surrounded in a moment, and she staggered to her feet, meeting the dwarf's concerned expressions one after another. She turned back to Beaufort, who's getting a hand up from Dwalin, and then looked to the corpse of the dragon, which lay, immense and unmoving, before them. "Bella," Feely said carefully, still on the ground beside her, "are you all right? Are you injured?" They were all alive, Bella realized. All alive, but none of them too terribly hurt. Bruised and scratched, but whole. Every one of them. They had slain a dragon! The mountain had been reclaimed! Why were they so solemn? Did they not understand? She laughed, a bit hysterically.
"Bella!"
Thorin grabbed her shoulders, shaking her a little.
"Speak to us."
She fell to her knees, slipping easily from his grasp. "All hail Thorin Oakenshield," she gasped, her voice choked with surprise and relief and the last remnants of her terror. "King under the mountain." There was a long, weighty silence as the dwarves looked at each other, and each of them stood a little straighter as the realization of their victory dawned on their faces. Bella, who'd expected a thunderous cheer, was shocked as, one by one, they fell into the embraces of their companions, tears pouring silently down their cheeks.
"Stand up, Bella,"
Thorin sat, his voice hoarse, clutching Feely and Keely tight to his chest.
"Do not bow to me."
He looked from dwarf to dwarf, all of whom were watching him with joyful, tear-streaked faces.
"None of you must ever bow to me."
At that, they did cheer. The aftermath was chaotic, as Bella had expected. If they had not thought what they would do once they reached the mountain, they certainly hadn't considered how to proceed after slaying the dragon. No one was too eager to approach the corpse, still as it was, and was far too large to drag out the front gates, regardless. The dwarves spent several hours gleefully sorting through the treasure piles, giving the dragon a wide berth, and were now on an expedition to the front gates. Thorin in particular seemed eager to reach the outside of the mountain, mentioning some messages he had to send, and the others had gone with him, except for Beaufort, who was still a bit dazed, and his kin. Bella elected to stay behind with them, too worn out for the lengthy walk to the mountain's entrance. Bitterly cursing the loss of her bedroll, she tried to make up a spot to rest with her cloak. It was wretchedly uncomfortable, and she wondered if perhaps that was why Smaug had been so irritable, sleeping on gold every day as he did. "Excuse me," came a voice from behind her. She opened her eyes and rolled over. "Oh, hello, Beaufort," she said. "How are you feeling?"
"Better, thank you," he said, with a hint of his usual smile. "My head still aches something fierce, but the room stopped spinning." Bella sat up.
Well, it's a start. Did you need something?
The smile fell off his face, and he shrugged.
Wanted to talk to you, without the others. Figured this might be my only chance.
Oh! She patted the ground beside her.
Well, have a seat, then. I warn you, it's not as cozy as the dragon made it look.
He flinched. Nah, better not. It's just... Bomber told me what you did. Saving my life and all.
That's not quite true.
Bella frowned.
Feely and Keely saved us both, if you remember.
You would have, he said, with no trace of his usual grin. It was beginning to unnerve her a bit.
They told me what happened when I fell. You had time to run. You had to choose between my life and yours, and you chose me.
It was on the tip of her tongue to make light of it, brush it away with a joke and a smile, but he looked so intense and unhappy that she knew it would not go over. So instead she told the truth, plain and unadorned.
That was not the choice. I could never have left you. So it was either try to save you or watch us die together.
And you chose me, he repeated, like he was trying to make something clear.
She shrugged. Obviously, it was only sensible. I'm not sure what you're after.
He stood still for a long moment, as if he expected her to speak further.
My family and I are at your service, now and always, he said at last, bringing a fist to his chest, over his heart.
We will not forget.
Bofur, there's no need, she said. We are companions. It was a battle. Any of the others would have done the same.
Perhaps, he said. But my oath stands. Only call for us, and we will come.
Well, I thank you, she said, uncomfortable. Will you sit now?
He smiled, only a little, but it made her feel better.
Nah, finish your nap. I'm going to have a bit of a lie down myself.
Fair enough, she said, laying down again. Do let me know if you figure out how to get comfortable on this heap.
Aye, I'll do that, he said, laughing as he walked away.
Belle! Keely shook her by the shoulder. Are you sleeping?
If I was, I'm not any longer, she grumbled, sitting up. How are the gates?
Brilliant! Keely sighed, dropping to the ground beside her. The tunnel's gone for miles and miles, all lined with carvings, and the ceilings glitter like the open sky at night. It's like something out of a tale.
Why, Keely, you could be a poet, Bella teased, poking him in the arm.
Shush, he smiled at her. You can't blame me for being excited. We've spent our whole lives hearing about the wonders of Erebor. Who'd have thought it all be true?
Not me, Feely agreed, sitting beside his brother. I wish you'd come along, Belle. The corridors don't read quite so badly of dragon.
You get used to it, Bella said, with a wave of her hand.
Rotting dragon? That's not a smell I'm looking forward to. Keely made a face.
Ah, it'll get all over the treasure.
Thorin will figure it out, Feely promised, pulling a little bag out of his pocket.
But speaking of treasure, look what I scavenged for you.
He tipped the bag, and a dozen golden bells, no bigger than a thumbnail, spilled into his open palm.
Very pretty, she smiled at him.
Here, let me, said Feely, tugging her over by her cloak. She allowed it, unresisting, and soon her hair was covered with a lattice of braids, each hung with a chiming bell.
Oh, Bella said, reaching into her pocket and pulling out her silver bells. Put these in, too.
Keely frowned.
But the new ones are so much nicer. These don't go at all.
They are very beautiful, Bella admitted. But I prefer my old ones, if it's all the same to you.
Feely pressed a kiss to her cheek and gave the silver bells pride of place beside her temples.
There, done.
She tossed her head from side to side, laughing at the clamor.
Well, I'll find these tedious before too long, she warned.
There's gems enough to swap them for, if we tire of the noise.
Feely smirked. You do realize you're sitting on a literal mountain of treasure.
I would trade it off my feather bed, she grumbled, swatting at some of the coins and sending them rolling down the pile. And maybe a pie.
Oh, I could go for that, Keely agreed. Like the ones I had back at your place in the Shire.
Keely, did you eat an entire pie? Bella said, appalled. Those were for everyone.
I remember that. I tried to take a piece and he bit my hand, Feely complained.
Keely snorted. It was a meat pie. You would have done the same. I'll make one for each of you, Bella promised. When we get the ingredients, and someone finds the kitchen, I shudder to think of the state of it.
Make me another pie and I'll help you clean it, Keely promised. Make more of those scones and I'll clean the whole place.
That's the nice thing about you dwarves. You do appreciate my cooking, Bella mused. Once we get some proper supplies, I'll make you anything you like. After all, we've slain the dragon. This time, the worst really must be behind us.